Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Wait, you're listening?
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
You're listening to Radio Lab.
Radio Lab.
From
WNYC.
See?
Yeah.
And NPR.
Hello, this is Lynn. Someone on the other side of this?
Hey, Lynn.
So a couple months ago, our producer, Lynn Levy, did an interview with this woman.
Yeah, her name is Margaret Lovett.
Yes.
And this was Margaret's first time doing a radio interview.
That magic voice. This is so fun.
But this was definitely not her first time talking into a microphone.
1, 2, 3, 4, this is the yellow mic. 1, 2, 3, 4, this is the orange mic.
Okay. Almost exactly 50 years ago.
The following recording was made on November 19, 1964, at 2300 hours.
Margaret was at the center of this amazing, weird experiment.
Yeah, yeah.
Who were you at that time? Like, what were you like?
Well, I've always had a bit of, if everybody's going left, I'll go right.
She tried college for a while.
Tulane University for a year.
But she dropped out.
And I was, what, 20 or 19 or something at that point.
And moved to St. Thomas in the Caribbean.
I'd never been to an island.
Got a job at this hotel.
Did menus, checked people in and out.
And one day she hears about this strange research facility on the other side of the island.
And I thought, I wonder what that is about. And I asked a few people and they said, oh, no, no. They don't like people there or can't go there. And I was told not to go there, so I went there. And that's how it all started.
And that's how we're going to start this show. I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
Today on Radio Lab, producer Lynn Levy brings us a couple of close encounters, although not with aliens.
No, it's not in outer space, because it's much
right.
closer to home in this case.
Although they are kind of alien-like.
Yes,
but,
alien-like.
Not
Lynn,
out
you
there.
It's a dolphin.
Yes, that's... Yes.
The show's about dolphins.
Yes.
Yay!
And we're calling this hour. Hello.
So when Margaret got to this mysterious place, there were dolphins there. And what happened was she ended up becoming roommates with a dolphin.
Do you mean in the, like, Bed-Stuy one-bedroom apartment sense?
Sort of, yeah. She did end up living with a dolphin for many months in this apartment.
I-E-A-E.
Like apartment?
Mm-hmm. Had a little desk, had a little kitchen area with a stove.
I think it was a little two-burner stove or something. And a pot and a tea kettle.
But the thing that's a little bit weird about the apartment is that the whole apartment was filled with water.
It was
completely filled?
I wasn't submerged, but I was in water up mid-thigh, sort of.
It was just flooded with water.
Just about there.
So she could share it with this dolphin.
A young male, Peter.
His Royal Highness Peter.
Peter was a 10-foot-long bobblenose dolphin, young adolescent male. And he lived there with Margaret, and, like, he would, he could, like, swim under the desk, and there was a balcony. He could, like, swim out onto the balcony.
And the balcony was flooded, too?
The balcony was also flooded. Yeah, it's really cool.
And what was the idea? I mean, to try and study a dolphin?
To study the dolphin, first of all, and take a lot of notes.
Extensive notes.
Did you have waterproof paper?
No. I had a typewriter on this board hanging from the ceiling.
They also had
microphones everywhere.
And specifically, the task she was given
A-E-I-O.
Was to teach Peter to speak English.
A-E-I-O.
And she was supposed to teach the dolphin English?
Yep.
Really?
Well, I mean, this was John Lilly's project.
Just for some context, you know how people get all, like, a little bit crazy these days about dolphins? They have, like, you know, shirts with dolphins and necklaces with dolphins, and everybody has, like, dolphin hairbands, dolphin blacklight posters, right? So this all kind of sort of comes from this guy, John Lilly, who was a scientist, a researcher, starting in the 40s.
A total right stuff physics major kind of guy out of Caltech.
Man's man, according to Graham Burnett.
I'm a historian of science.
But then, according to Graham, John Lilly has this epiphany.
during the Second World War.
At the time, people just weren't thinking that much about dolphins in general. Like, there was not this idea that they were sort of extraordinary beings. They were just like big, dumb fish. You know, they were shot for sport. So John Lilly is doing this research about brain mapping, and he ends up working with dolphins. And when the story that he's told goes that he was experimenting on these dolphins, and as he's working with them, you know, kind of like shoving things into their brains, they make noises, as would anyone. And when he listens back to the noises, which he's recorded, it sounds to him like the dolphins are trying to speak to him, to say something to him not in a dolphin-y way, but in a human way, like trying to speak English to him.
Really?
Yeah.
What did he say the dolphin was trying to say to him?
I don't think that we know that, but it sounded to him enough like human speech that he thought, like, something's going on here. This is important. According to Graham, he said later that it made him realize, like, we're
not the only intelligent organisms out there.
Like, we have company.
That maybe humans are what happens when high intelligence evolves in an animal that also has hands. And dolphins are what happens when comparably, if not still more extravagant intelligence evolves in an animal without hands.
What do hands get you?
Well, hands basically get you an appetite for punching people in the head. it makes us tool users, but the distance between the hammer that you use to knock open your coconut and the hammer that you use to knock open the head of that other Cro-Magnon you were never that keen on is, in fact, zilch. There's no difference at all.
And by the time we got to the 60s with, you know, like peace and love,
it was exciting to think that the dolphins and the whales have these huge brains, but they don't, like, they're not after anything. They're not doing anything with it. They're not trying to hurt anybody. They're not building cities. They're just, like, being, man.
And keep in mind, this is on the verge of the Vietnam War, where you have all this anxiety about
what have they done to the earth?
Overpopulation, environmental destruction.
What have they done to our fair system?
So very quickly, the dolphins become like this vision
of how we might ourselves be so different than we'd come to feel we were, tragically. Does that make sense?
So John Lilly was one of the first people to get swept up in all this. He quits his government job, moves to the Caribbean, and sets up this lab.
John Lilly's Communication Research Institute.
To try to talk to dolphins, which is where Margaret ended up.
And my feeling was this, that everybody was talking about how bright they were and how smart they were, and it was dolphins, 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 and then it was the hot topic. And yet every day, everybody at that building would get in their car and go home.
Yeah.
And I thought, what is that?
So she volunteered to stay.
Yeah, yeah.
Her bed was on this kind of wooden platform in the middle of the apartment.
I was maybe 2.5-3 inches above the water. And Peter was right there. And Peter could flip me a little water and wake me up at any point. And that was the whole point of it. I mean, this wasn't just sleep all night and then, work in the day and then sleep again all night and then do some work in the day. I might as well go home.
Yeah.
So I eventually, I didn't really shave my head, but I buzzed it, whatever it's called now, really close, because any, you know, the hair getting wet thing in the middle of the night was very annoying.
Yeah, of course.
So I just got rid of the hair, and that was helpful. And then when Peter would come and squirt some water or want to play or throw something at me, then I could just roll off this elevator into the water and be with him and do whatever.
She says he was fascinated by the things she brought with her.
A piece of cloth, a tea bag. Tea bag was a fascinating thing. I drink tea, and the tea bag would fall into the water. And he would come and get it and sonar it, this creaking noise they make when they're sonaring, and he'd look at it and take the string over his beak and sort of swim around very proudly with his tea bag. And then he'd throw it up against a wall, and it would stick. And then he'd squirt water on it, and it would come back down into the water, and he would play with his tea bag. Eventually, of course, he would bite it. He has very sharp teeth,
yeah.
And it would break. And that was a very exciting thing when the tea bag finally broke open. It had babies, as it were, zillions of tea leaves floating around, and he would sonar them all and want to count every single one of them.
And what did you think you would find out?
I didn't know. You know, I was not coming at this from a science point of view. That's not what I was bringing to the table.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I was programmed by John to work on the speech.
A-E-I-O.
He had sort of declared that they could probably speak.
A-E-I-O.
Look, when you're trying to have a conversation with someone...
Peter, listen.
One person speaks,
I-O.
And the other one listens. And then you speak, and I listen. And people sort of normally do that back and forth. When you start with a dolphin making airborne sounds, once they get the idea, there's a lot of screaming that goes on. They're very show-offy, and they want to override you. So you have to spend a lot of time getting it down to, I'm talking now.
I can speak now.
And now it's your turn.
I can speak now.
And yet if he's upset about something, he'll override me.
Ooh, Peter.
And it's annoying.
Now listen again. No. What's this? Come on, Peter. 1, 2, 3. 3. Now start again. 1, 2, 3. Yes. One.
But he learned very quickly to listen to me.
1, 2, 3, 4. Yes, baby. Good.
And not to pick up my instructions. If I would say, no, 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 Peter, I don't want you to do that. I want you to do this, this, this. He would give me back this, this, this. A parrot will often say, no, 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 Polly want a cracker. They will repeat the whole thing of whatever you said.
Huh.
But Peter would pick up what I wanted when he was being a good student.
And he was a good student.
There seemed to be, with this one dolphin anyway, can't speak for all of them, an interest in what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to practice. He wanted to get it right. There was a mirror, and he would spend long periods of time by himself, didn't want me to be part of it. And he would practice whatever it was we had been doing in the lesson that day, over and over and over and over. He wanted to get it right. No, it's not right. And he would work at that. For no reason. He's not getting fish. I'm not interacting with him and nothing. He just wants it right.
Like doing homework.
Like homework, exactly.
And after a few months of this...
One.
Peter did start to sound really different.
1, 2. 1, 2, 3. Better. 4.
He kept getting better. It's extremely difficult for them.
Hello.
They just have a blowhole. They do not have the apparatus to really... S's are almost impossible. I would feed him my name.
Margaret.
And M is very hard. He would eventually roll over almost into the water with the blowhole to muffle the...
Margaret.
Kind of a thing.
Really? You're saying he would use the water as a way to help him make the sound?
Yes.
Margaret.
With that word.
Good.
And
do you think he knew that was your name?
I don't know. But nevertheless, we were a pretty good match. I knew his mood, his temperament, and he knew mine. He knew when I was sick. And I would get sick. And you're in the water all the time. You're bound to get a cold or something. He just loved my anatomy. He wanted to know what my knees were doing. He would go behind my knee and sonar and look at it and feel it and push it and find out which way it would and wouldn't go. And I gave him the time. because I wasn't going home, to look at my knee, to look at my feet. He was enormously interested, oddly enough, in this space between my fingers.
Really?
Not the fingers so much, but he would, I mean, you know, his beak could just barely fit there, but he wanted to put in between each finger and see what that was all about. The same with the toes. He didn't have any spaces anywhere. You know, he had solid flippers, but no space in between them.
Do you think he was so interested in your fingers and toes because he didn't have any?
Yes, I do.
Margaret and Peter ended up spending about 9 months living together. But towards the end, things kind of started to unravel. First of all, there weren't really results from this experiment. They never were able to publish any scientific papers. And there were other problems. Lily got very involved in drugs, especially.
LSD, he did bring it down. He did give LSD. He says he did. I believe him, too. To two of the Daltons. I would not let him give LSD to Peter. I wouldn't allow that.
Why would he give them LSD?
Well, it's not 100% clear, but it seems like he was trying to find a way to get the Dolphins to open up, to connect, maybe to talk. Huh. In any case, by 1965, 66, his funding had started to dry up. And when people heard about Margaret's work, they tended to focus on like one particular part of the story. You don't have to answer, but a lot has been made of your sort of sexually engaging with Peter. And I just want to ask, because you don't seem like a shrinking violet, I just want to ask, is there anything you want to say about that?
What would I like to say about that? I think the sensational side of it is...
Here's what Margaret told me. Peter was a young dolphin. He was horny, and he would hump her leg a lot, kind of like a dog might do, which was getting in the way of their work.
So eventually I just said, the heck with it.
And she'd use her hand to, you know.
And it would quickly satisfy him, and then we could go back to doing what we were doing. And I never really gave it another thought. I never thought, ooh, don't let anybody know. I never thought... Yeah. Ooh, this shouldn't be.
But because of details like this and the drugs, this experiment became extremely controversial, almost untouchable. People didn't want to be associated with Lily. Nobody wanted to fund anything that sounded like Lily. It just got this, like, aura of...
Don't go there.
Don't go there. Even people who wanted to do really rigorous work with human-dolphin communication had a tough time getting any funding. And that lasted for a long time. And the thing is, even though there are so many reasons to disapprove of this experiment, when you talk to Margaret, you can't help but want to be in that apartment with them.
He would come over, and when he was in what I call his sweet mood, and Peter had a lot of very, very sweet mood to him, he would sink to the bottom and take my foot in his mouth. And he wasn't sonaring and he wasn't looking at anything. It was almost like a little kid comes and just wants to hold your hand. And he would just sink to the bottom and close his eyes and just hang on to my foot. And then he'd have to come up and breathe. And then he'd go back down and he'd just grab my foot. And he would do this for a good while.
We'll be back in a moment with another encounter.
You have two new messages.
Hi, this is
D. Graham Burnett.
Yes. Hi, this is Margaret Lovett.
Here we go.
Radiolab is supported in part by the National Science Foundation.
And the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
More information about Sloan at www.sloan.org.
Radiolab is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR.
I think that's it. I'll hang up now. Thanks again.
Take it easy.
Bye.
End of message.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.